I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Would you like to learn how you can generate more leads without struggling to deliver your services to the clients you already have? What if you were taught how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage tools like podcasts, social media, and video in order to constantly bring in leads, sales, and keep your pipeline full? And what if you knew how to hire the right talent that'll help you scale your business and create greater value without being so hands-on? Join our free Smashing the Plateau community, where listeners and guests of Smashing the Plateau connect, collaborate, and learn how to smash the plateau in business, work, and life. You can join at smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Elaine Pofeld. Elaine is an independent journalist who specializes in small business, entrepreneurship, and careers. She's the author of The $1 Million One-Person Business, a look at how entrepreneurs are hitting seven-figure revenue in businesses where they are the only employees. Her work has appeared in Fortune, Money, CNBC, Inc., Forbes, Crain's New York Business, and many other business publications, and she's a contributor to the Economist Intelligence Unit. Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
So, Elaine, what made you decide to write The $1 Million One-Person Business?
I've been writing about entrepreneurship for many years, and one thing that always bugged me, David, is the fact that one-person businesses were considered failures in a certain way. Often in journalism, we gravitate toward writing about businesses that are scalable, that have become the next Facebook. And we tend to think about the businesses that never grow beyond one person as businesses that failed to scale because the owner didn't do something. They didn't delegate enough. They didn't read the e-myth. They don't have vision. There are so many reasons that we sort of beat up the smaller businesses. But what I realized after interviewing hundreds of entrepreneurs every year was that many people love running one-person businesses. They love the lifestyle. They don't want all the headaches that come with setting up payroll and all the things that come with being an employer. And they don't feel they failed at all. They feel they're very successful in achieving what they want. The challenge, though, is building a sustainable one-person business. When you have only one person as the employee in the business, there are certain vulnerabilities. You have to build your own safety net. We don't have much of a social safety net in the U.S. for free agents. So you need money to pay for things like healthcare or funding your own retirement. I found a sort of solution to this problem in writing my Forbes blog on one-person businesses. I came across some statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau a few years ago showing that there were businesses, they call them non-employer businesses in U.S. government lingo. These are those where the owners are the only employees that were breaking seven-figure revenue. And I was really curious because I know a lot of people running one-person businesses, they are not breaking $1 million in revenue. And I started slicing and dicing the data to see what they were doing. And they were in all kinds of different industries. I couldn't find out too much beyond what industry category codes they had from the Census Bureau because they like to protect people's privacy. So while I knew they were in manufacturing, for instance, I didn't know what they were manufacturing. Or if they were in retail, I didn't know if they were doing e-commerce. So I began asking people who read my blog to write to me, and if they were one of these business owners, to tell me what they were doing. And the posts had a huge response. Some of them went very viral. I had people emailing me, writing to me through the website, contacting me by text message if they knew me well enough to try to find out what these people were doing. And so I started writing about it about 3 years ago, and as I built a body of work about it, I started to draw conclusions about what they had in common. And that led to the $1 million one-person business.
Yeah, so your own curiosity clearly touched a nerve in a lot of people. It wasn't just you who was curious.
Exactly. I think there are a lot of people who get to a certain point in a one-person business where they feel like if they could just get a little further with their revenue, they could relax. They could put away enough money for retirement. They could take vacation without worrying about being away for 2 weeks. But they don't know what it is that they need to do. And I have felt that way too. But what's different about the people in the million-dollar one-person business is that they think differently. They've scaled their thinking beyond the thinking of what many one-person business owners employ, and that helps them to grow their revenue beyond what one person can usually generate.
Wow. So before we actually talk about some of those details, what strikes me in your description of the one-person business and also the impression that other people have about the one-person business is that success is very personal. And if lots of people are considering one-person businesses by default to be failure, it's really based on the success criteria of the person who is considering these one-person businesses to be failure, as opposed to the business owners themselves of these one-person businesses who may be perfectly content running a one-person business and feel very successful.
I agree with you, David. I think that many of them are very happy. If you look at the quarterly surveys that come out about small business owners, they are happy people in general, and most of them are one-person business owners. If you look at the vast majority of small businesses in the United States, they're one-person businesses, and they are very excited about the amount of freedom that they have, the amount of autonomy that they have about working with no boss. They love their lives. The ones who are less happy are those who have not figured out the right revenue model, because it's no fun not being able to pay your bills. It's very, very stressful. Then you're operating on a survival level and no one wants to be there. It's just uncomfortable. But for people who hit their stride and figure out what works and how to build a sustainable business, they feel very successful.
Okay, so that obviously leads me to the question, Elaine, what's the magic formula?
There is no magic formula, but what I will say is there are some common threads. One is that people who run the seven-figure one-person businesses that I've come across have really gotten out of the mindset of trading their time for money. There are a few exceptions to that, which I'll get into, but they look for a way not to get paid by the hour. I think a lot of people in jobs think about, okay, you know, I get my paycheck for the week. That mindset is not the right mindset if you want to scale a one-person business. You have to think beyond that sort of trade-off and look at how can I leverage what I already know, what I've put years into learning, and make more than I can make in an hour for it. You know, how can I charge what its value really is to other people? I just came across an entrepreneur who is involved in marketing and copywriting, and he wrote a book about marketing yourself on Amazon that he charges $400 for. And he based the price based on what he perceives the value of that book to be to his customers. And he has sold a number of copies. So that's the kind of thinking that you need. If you think in the old ways about trading time for money, you will get stuck. The other thing is that they are goal-oriented. They set revenue goals, and they don't let what has been done before keep them from setting higher goals in the future. They're really, if you look back maybe 10 years ago, there weren't many million-dollar one-person businesses, but the numbers keep growing every year. The pioneers didn't worry about what was done before. They worried about what they could accomplish. So they're not limited by what other people can do. And the other thing that I think they have in common is they think scalably in terms of extending what they can accomplish in a day. So they'll use automation extensively, sometimes using little tools, you know, like scheduling apps and things that might save them time. But they also look for industry-specific tools. They will also outsource. So they might use an army of other contractors who are also building their businesses as they get work from this entrepreneur to scale what they can do and to fill in the gaps in their expertise so that they're not wasting time teaching themselves web design if they're really not a web designer. And they can focus on the vision for the business and what they do best.
Right. So does that, if they're outsourcing lots of work. Are they really one person businesses?
On paper, yes. If they don't have any employees, by the definition of the Census Bureau, you're a non-employer business if you don't have W-2 employees. But no, they are not isolated people that work with no one. You know, I think the name, the million-dollar one-person business, might give the sense that the person operates in isolation. But what I found is these entrepreneurs are very connected to other people. They have powerful networks of business friends who work with them that help power their businesses. And they like it that way. They don't want to live in isolation or work in isolation. So they're really part of a community.
Mm. Okay, so automation, outsourcing, what are some of the other techniques that you've seen that work really well?
I think a lot of times they have symbiotic relationships with other businesses so that they might, for instance, cross-promote things with other businesses that are also scaling in this way and help each other. They're very collaborative people. They leverage technology to expand their reach as well. So they might use tools like webcasting, for instance. Instead of giving a talk in their local bookstore, for instance, they might have a webcast that brings in thousands of people, which then helps them scale their message and their vision and scale their revenue if they're charging for it.
Mm. What's an example of how somebody might collaborate?
Well, there are many ways. For instance, a lot of the million-dollar one-person businesses have built a community around their ideas. So sometimes they may come across another like-minded person that has interesting ideas that will interest their audience. So they might, for instance, if they have webcasts, they might invite somebody who would interest their audience onto that webcast as a guest speaker. That might be one example.
Mm. And is the reverse collaboration also true for the same individuals?
Meaning that the person that they promote would then in turn promote them?
Right.
Sometimes that does happen. I think that it's not necessarily a quid pro quo, but I think there's sort of a more general kind of karma to it all, and that they're freely helpful to other people, and sometimes those same people help them, sometimes other people help them, but they tend to be very generous in spirit.
Interesting. And what are some of the things that you think people that are trying to achieve this level of financial success as a single person business should avoid doing? What are some of the pitfalls?
I one thing I would say is try to avoid doing everything yourself. I think there's a stage in the beginning of starting a business where cash flow is tight, and there is a fear among many business owners of committing, to spending money on a social media person to promote them or hiring a web designer. When you have your revenue starting to flow, you do have to make some investments in your business. And if you don't make investments at those crucial points and try to do everything yourself, you're just going to move very, very slowly. So you may not be able to hire everyone you need, but you do need to think about, okay, who do I need this year that will really help me grow my business? I think for a lot of people, getting a good accountant is really important, or a good bookkeeper, because many people, especially creative types, are coming to business new. They maybe don't have an MBA. They don't know a lot about finance. And then all of a sudden they're running a business where they have to keep good financial records to pay their taxes and make business decisions. And if you don't really have a handle on that, you really need somebody to help you. So I would say prioritize and figure out what one person do you need as a contractor or vendor who will help you grow your business this year. And then as the business grows, you can add other people. Maybe next year, in addition to that, you add somebody to help you with PR or marketing or social media. You have to really think about what your goals are for the business. Mm-hmm. But definitely avoiding that trap of trying to do everything yourself is really important.
Do you think it's important to have something like a list of tasks that you could potentially assign to somebody else or outsource, and constantly look at that and prioritize that and think about where can you outsource, and as a result you'll be able to scale something else?
I think that's a great idea, David. I would highly recommend that. I think looking at what you're not getting done is really important too. I know in my own business, I would always fall behind on entering things into FreshBooks or QuickBooks. And I finally realized I hate doing it. Why am I not, you know, why am I trying to do this? And I hired a bookkeeper and it's been a huge relief. You know, sometimes it's just looking at what you keep on procrastinating about that will tell you where you should be hiring somebody. So that just sort of looking at those gaps is very important. Thank you.
Elaine, do you think that there might be sort of a rule of thumb or a guide as to what percent of your business's revenue you should think about using as a budget for outsourcing because it will help you scale faster?
There is no concrete rule of thumb as far as deciding what budget you should set aside for outsourcing. What I would say is once you're able to cover a reasonable salary for yourself and that you have some insulation from bumps in your revenue stream and your cash flow, then it's time to start thinking about what can I outsource. You might want to make sure you have a certain cushion for unexpected fluctuations in taxes, healthcare costs, etc. before you do that. But I wouldn't wait too long because you can put it off too long and then not get the help you need to grow.
Right, right. So what I guess I'm hearing is get to the point where you're covering your household expenses and your operating expenses for your business, and then take a serious look at how you can start making some investments that will help you scale.
Exactly. And it's important to realize that it doesn't cost that much to bring in help. You don't necessarily have to put someone on retainer for $5,000 a month to get the help you need. Consulting with a good accountant might cost far less. Maybe, you know, if you're running a one-person business, your operations may not be that complicated. So you may be able to consult with them on an as-needed basis. Other types of help, like a bookkeeper, might be more recurring. But it really doesn't cost that much. And the growth of platforms like Upwork, Freelancer, People Per Hour, makes it very easy to find professionals all over the world to help you.
That's great advice. So, Elaine, I want to ask you a bonus question, which is, how have you applied some of these principles in your own business? I know you said that you've really started researching this concept of the million-dollar one-person business in the last 3 years, but you've been in business a lot longer than that. And I wondered if you could maybe boil it down to a couple of major tips that our listeners can try to apply to themselves if they're running a single person business. And before you answer the question, we're going to actually put that answer inside our Facebook group. So I'm going to ask you to think about it, and I want to move on and talk about along the way, what has been most helpful to you as you've thought through and tried different tactics for yourself in your business? What have been some of the most helpful resources for you?
One of the most important things for me has been listening to my heart. I think that many of us as adults silence what we really feel. We feel that we have certain responsibilities that we have to sort of suck it up and stick to in order to be a good parent, spouse, partner, etc. But sometimes that can hurt us in the long run. If we stay committed to a corporate career when that's no longer working for us, and just try to tough it out despite what our heart is telling us, we can wind up with a disconnect and regrets. I know I always was a corporate person. I liked working on a team. I loved the environment of working with a lot of smart people. I loved the stimulation. When I had my children, I have 4 children, ages 7 to 13, my life changed a bit, as it does for most parents. And I found that I missed having as much time as I wanted at home with them. Even though I had a very generous work from home arrangement at my corporate job, it really couldn't have been more generous. On the days that I was in the office, I always felt like I was missing something important by not being able to be there with them. And I felt like all of my life was logistics. I was always planning for when I wasn't going to be there, or always worrying about what was happening when I wasn't there. And with that going on for a while, I started to feel like I really had to pay attention to it. I at that point in my career was somewhat of a believer in the sort of lean in thing for women. And so I wanted to sort of prove to myself that I could do that. And I kept doing it, but I found myself envying freelance writers a lot. So when I worked with them at my job, I would often ask them what their life was like and what type of projects they were doing. And I kept on thinking, you know, this is what I want for myself. I just want more flexibility. And finally, I had to listen to that voice. And it was the best thing I ever did. It was just something I tried to resist and not hear. But my heart kept telling me I really wanted to be able to work from home and have my own business. And I think the world has a way of making things work for you when you're aligned with what you really care about and what matters to you in your personal life and in your work life. And it worked out very well for me. It's been 10 years now, and I have 4 children. I had 3 at the time, but I've been so lucky to be able to lead the type of lifestyle I want with my family and in my work.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is it's really important to allow ourselves to dream and then to think about how to turn those dreams into reality.
Exactly. I think there are many forces in society that will tell us it's wrong to want certain things. You know, you should want to be a corporate climber or whatever it is, you know, depending on your circle of friends. But not listening to those shoulds is important. We all have to live our own life and follow our own path. And the more you can really tune in, I think the happier you'll be.
That's why I love the Robert Frost poem about two roads diverging in the wood. And mm-hmm. And I took the road less traveled.
It's hard to do. It's, you know,
it's very hard to do.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of social support for entrepreneurship. I'm surrounded by entrepreneurs, so I get a sort of distorted sense of how much support there is. But when I'm around friends that have more steady corporate and government jobs, they don't envy that, you know? So if you've been part of that crowd and all of a sudden you decide, oh, I'm going to start a business, it might seem very risky to the people around you, and you might not get a lot of support, and you have to be prepared to just stick with it anyway, if that's what you really believe in.
Yeah. So along those lines, Elaine, whom do you know personally who has done a remarkable job at smashing the plateau?
I'll give you a couple of examples. One person who I thought did a fantastic job is Laszlo Nadler, who appears in my book, The $1 Million One-Person Business. He was a project manager at a big bank in New York and is married with 2 young children. And as much as he liked his job, he just didn't want to continue with the corporate lifestyle. He had a dream of having his own business, and he loved planning time and that sort of thing, being a project manager. So he started coming up with planners that he designed himself that were not focused on someone's to-do list, but more on the big picture in life and what they really wanted to accomplish in the grand scheme of things. And he started selling them on Amazon. And when he got to a 6-figure income, he finally felt he had enough economic security that he could safely leave his job without jeopardizing his family's lifestyle. And he started a very successful business, which is now bringing in about $2 million a year. And it's still a one-person business. He uses contractors, but he's the only employee. And he has a wonderful lifestyle and a beautiful family. And he's a great example. And he was very generous in sharing his story with me.
It sounds also like he has a really clear niche in the marketplace.
He does. He understood that niche very well, because this is what he did, project management. He understood management of time and the bigger principles behind it. And so he started a business called Tools for Wisdom, where he brought those two things together.
Perfect. And did you want to mention another one?
Well, the other one is my dad, Walter Pofeld. He worked for the New York City Housing Authority for about 25 years while we were kids. And then when he retired, he pursued his dream of being a photographer. And he just did an art show last year. He's now in his 70s, and he did a complete career change, and he loves what he's doing. So it's never too late, and he's still very active as a photographer.
What a great example. And Elaine, I know your book is out. What's coming up for you in the near future?
Well, I hope to meet some of the readers in the near future. One of the things that's really great when you're a writer is actually getting feedback on your work and talking with real people who are interacting with what you've written. So I hope, as I'm out promoting the book, I get a chance to meet people in person.
It sounds great. And how can people learn more about you and follow you?
If they go to themilliondollaronepersonbusiness.com, they can find out more information about the book. I also have an active Twitter presence. My handle is at Elaine Pofeld, and I know that last name is a mouthful, so I'll spell it for you. It's P as in Peter, O, F as in Frank, E, L as in Larry, D as in David, T as in Tom. So Elaine Pofeld.
Well, Elaine, it's been great talking with you today on Smashing the Plateau. Great discussion about how particularly very small businesses can make some dramatic shifts and scale and be quite successful.
Thank you so much, David. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on with you.
My guest today has been Elaine Pofeld, author of The $1 Million One-Person Business. Thank you again, Elaine, for joining us.
Thank you, David. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. To get Elaine's answer to my bonus question, join our free Smashing the Plateau community on Facebook, where all the practical tips that our guests share on this show will be there waiting for you to sift through and implement in your own business. Our community focuses on helping you uncover things such as how to generate leads, how to scale your business by hiring the right talent, and how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage new tools such as podcasts, social media, and video. Go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join now. We want you to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life.